you know you're going to have a good product. You're going to have good teacher. You know you're going to learn. It's not just a place that people dump their kid and go. It's a place where the kid is going to learn something. It's all about self-confidence, you know. And again, food and creating food and sharing food, I think we're giving them a life skill that I know. I have a lot of friends who send their kid there, and they say, when they come home, they just want to share their little passion of what they learned in the last 3 hours, you know, and they want to go back tomorrow. And it's probably a life-changing event, sending your kid to Lower Kitchen Academy.
A good kitchen produces good food, but a great kitchen brings people together. Welcome to Meet Me in the Kitchen, a podcast inspired by Little Kitchen Academy and supported by Birkenstock, exploring the key ingredients to a meaningful life and how they are changing lives from scratch. Here's my dad and your host, Scott Rintoul.
Ideas are a dime a dozen. It's what you do with the idea that is important. Not to play spoiler here, but you'll hear Eve Potvin dispense that quality advice in just a few minutes on this podcast. The man often referred to as the founding father of plant-based foods has most certainly done more than most with his ideas. He invented the veggie dog. He created two very successful plant-based food companies, Eve Fine Food and Gardein, that have redefined how people eat. And he's recently launched another, Conscious Foods, that will undoubtedly shake up the market once again. Not only is Eve an innovator, but he's an educator as well. He and his wife own Pacific Institute of Culinary Arts in Vancouver, and he still enjoys teaching at the school. So when Eve saw the same type of philosophy being employed at Little Kitchen Academy to empower young children and teenagers through cooking, he became both an investor and an advocate. That path also led him to Meet Me in the Kitchen for a conversation about entrepreneurship, frozen sushi, and what kind of condiments he likes to put on his veggie dog. Now, the temptation is for me to ask you a food or restaurant or culinary related question off the top, but I'm actually interested in starting with a bicycle. And I'm wondering if you can tell me and everyone else how a bicycle actually began your journey into the culinary world.
Yes. So long time ago, many decades ago, I studied culinary art in Montreal, Quebec, and that's my home province. And I went to travel the world. You know, culinary, as we're going to talk about it, it's a basic skill that everybody needs to learn. It's a survival skill. And I went to travel in South America about a year. I worked in a mission in Guatemala, learned Spanish. And when I came back, Quebec was minus 30 degrees for 3 weeks. I decided that I'm going to move to the California of Canada, and that's Vancouver. But being a little bit of a workaholic, I figure, you know, and I tell that to my student at the Pacific Institute of Culinary Art, you know, once you finish your graduation, take some time off, learn a little bit about yourself, go discover the world, what are you made of? And the world is an amazing place. And once you get a solid job and you get married or you get into a relationship, then it's very tough to stop the process. So for me, I said, I love food. I love cooking. And I want to move to the West Coast. But I know if I flew to the West Coast, I would probably found two jobs and be back in the cycle. And so somehow I dreamt about Vancouver one night. And this crazy came to me about why not cycle across the country? It's an amazing journey to discover your country. For me, it was a 5,300-kilometer journey. And I like to say there's nothing in the world like going to bed when the sun goes down and waking up when the sun goes up and then do 80 miles on the bike to discover your country and yourself.
Now, not anyone could just take on cycling across Canada, second largest country in the world. So you must be a bit of an athlete with your background. Are you still cycling? What keeps you active today?
Yes. You know, I was not a cyclist. I played hockey, as we talked a little earlier, for about 15 years. I played baseball. I played a lot of tennis. Cycling, I never, I cycle like every kid at the time, but I was not a hardcore cyclist. But it was a way for me to get across the country. And I did train about 1,000 miles and, you know, I never really did a lot of camping. So this was also a new discovery when you sleep in a 1-inch mattress. But today, I mean, you know, I do regular exercise, cardio. My wife and I love to hike. You know, British Columbia is so beautiful, hiking. We also golfing and, you know, do a different kind of sport. I love the social aspect of golfing. We're trying to stay healthy, you know.
The other theme that emerges in what you're saying is that you, from an early age, appear to have had a very adventurous spirit. And many would argue that to be an entrepreneur, you need to have an adventurous spirit. Do you feel that way about entrepreneurship?
Entrepreneurship, you know, I'm giving a talk next week in Toronto, and my talk is From Chef to Entrepreneur. And the big question in people ask, you know, are you born an entrepreneur or can you be made an entrepreneur? And at a very early age for me, I think I was an elder boy at 7 years old, and my brother and I cornered the marriage market in our township because it was paying 25 cents a marriage. So we were doing every marriage, and sometimes you had a tip for a dollar. So, you know, very quickly I realized I love the independence of making my own money, and I bought my first bike, and I never looked backward. I always made my own money, and there's something nice to create and be independent. So, you know, when I arrived in Vancouver, I was a chef, and I quickly realized, you know, I want to do something else. And that's when I went into food manufacturing.
How did that transition occur? Because it's easy to have an idea, but it's not easy for many people to put it into practice.
You know, I like to say, Scott, ideas are a dime a dozen. It's what you do with the idea that it's important. For me, you know, I think I've read somewhere that most of us will change career 3 times in our lifetime, you know. So I actually went to school in architectural design, didn't really like it. And it was a friend of mine who says, you know, you love hospitality, you love to entertain, you love to cook. You ever thought of being a chef? And I said, you know, the worst thing that's going to happen is I'm going to have good food for the rest of my life. And so I work in the industry for 7 years. But when I arrived in Vancouver, I was ready for something bigger, something different. And so I sort of did a balance sheet analysis of myself in the marketplace and say, what do I have as an individual? Well, you know, number one quality of entrepreneur is perseverance. And I've just proved that by crossing the country. And I was into the nouvelle cuisine, French cuisine. So the healthier part of the French cuisine. And I was very athletic. You know, when I arrived in Vancouver, I ran a marathon. So always into the health and fitness. You know, I start my business in the 80s. And the 80s, you had Weight Watcher as a food, but you had to have a weight problem to eat that. You had Hungry Man and not a lot of healthy, convenient food. And as I like to say, mom in the 70s was cooking and mom in the 80s was working. So when I put the marketplace, cholesterol, baby boomer, fast food, obesity, et cetera, I came out, my aha moment was there's a market for healthy, convenient food. And cholesterol was something that we just discovered there's good and bad cholesterol. So that was the aha moment. And then finally, plant-based became the next step.
That is a big leap to make in the 80s to go to plant-based because certainly it was not as easy to attain as it is today. You mentioned that it was a decade where people were starting to find health-conscious foods, exercise, but it was very unattainable. So what inspired you to actually create the Veggie Dog?
So the plant-based actually was, you know, there was an article in the New York Times about the miracle of soy. And the Asian diet in the 80s had a lot less osteosclerosis problem, a lot less cancer, until they moved to the North American diet. And so in the 80s, and, you know, I was reading a lot of stuff, but, you know, 2,000 years ago, we were 200 million people. And it took 1,800 years to reach 1 billion people. And in between 1900 and 1988, we grew 4 billion. So it was just a matter of, you know, looking at our resource, looking at our environment and looking at social responsibility, sustainability. And plant-based, it makes so much sense, but you need to transform the plant into something that people are accustomed to. And people say, well, veggie dog doesn't make a lot of sense. I said, well, when you kill a cow or an animal, the hot dog don't comes out like that. You have to take bits and pieces apart. You stuff it, smoke it, and you put it in a bun. And in North American, we have a ritual of, you know, in Chicago, you have the pepper and all different kind of thing. But it becomes part of our tradition. You know, you go to the ballpark with your dad and you have a hot dog or you have a barbecue. So the whole ritual of eating a hot dog, doesn't matter what you put in, it becomes a tradition. So it doesn't matter if it's a veggie dog, a beef dog, a salmon dog, a chicken dog. We love the convenience of having a hot dog. And originally I was going to do my idea was a cholesterol-free hot dog. But you quickly realize that if you have meat or fish, there's cholesterol in the product. And that's where I went to veggie dog. And the main thing is I found out there was 15 million hot dog consumed every day in North America in 1985. So I figure even if I get 1% of that market, there has to be a market. People like me that I used to love hot dog, but, you know, at that time anyway, the hot dog industry was not the cleanest product you could put in your stomach.
So I think people listening today could see a veggie dog and think, oh, I could make one better. But you're starting from scratch. You're starting where there are no such thing as veggie dogs at that time. What was the process like from, okay, I've got an idea to now I actually have a veggie dog?
You know, we still do the same process, R&D. You really do a lot of research. I went to work with a butcher. Okay, how do you do real sausages, you know? And then you take almost like a painting, you start putting color and you start designing the structure, the skeleton. And for me, I start using tofu. That was the only ingredient available then. And I stuff it in a casing and I said, well, this is not too good. And then I start using gluten, wheat gluten, to give you a texture. And then I start smoking it. And I start, you know, in the beginning, I used to have egg white because egg white is one of the best binder. And the whole idea of a hot dog is you bind water, fat, and protein together. And there's a lot of garlic and a lot of mustard and a lot of flavor in the product to give you that flavor and the smoking process naturally. Traditional hot dog have a 30 to 40% fat. And we love the chewiness of the fat and the whole experience. So trying to duplicate that to really start from basic. And it took me about a year until I found I had a product that was good. And quickly, my first year in sales was 250,000. Second year was 600. Third year, 1 million, then 2, then 4, then 8, then 16. And, you know, it grew like 50% per year for 13 years in a row. So everybody that said, you're crazy, there's no market for that. You know, I like to say, Scott, and when you're a startup, you have to think, are you the first? If not, are you the best? Or how different are you? Well, when I created Veggie Dog, I was the first, therefore the best, therefore different, you know? But it's a pioneer job. You need to create a market. But I think the market was ready for a new product like this.
Well, there are lots of stories of entrepreneurship where someone creates a great product, but they either don't know how to market it, or they come at the wrong time. They're too early. Maybe they're too late.
So one of the perfect example of that, Scott, is Segway. Segway was an amazing way to transport. And they were too early in a game. So they went bankrupt.
You're right. And I look at what you did, and obviously you hit all of those things. You were at the right time. You knew how to market well. You had a very good product. Was it through taste tests, through your friends? Was it a company that all of a sudden tried one and said, we'll order a whole bunch? What all of a sudden showed you that it was going to work?
You know, 90% of the company don't make it the first 5 years. That's the most critical time. It's like a young child, very fragile. So you need to be able to adapt, learn your lesson. Every business makes mistake. This, the only way you learn is by making mistake. As long as you don't make the same mistake twice. You know, that's the goal over here. But in the beginning, I launched my product and I put it in the hot dog section in the supermarket. And very quickly, I realized, you know, I would go in the section, I couldn't see my product. Well, because the person who display is usually a butcher in a store, and he couldn't understand why there was, that's what he called it, fake hot dog in his section. So he made sure that it was not successful. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to switch to the produce section. And then we went to see the produce, and the produce was open because suddenly they had value-added product to sell there. And so, you know, as an entrepreneur, you are a solution provider. This problem every day, and I can tell you my problem today. Every day there's issue. How do you resolve the problem? And sometimes problems are opportunity. And that's what you have to look at it. The first year, as soon as we start selling the product, we had, you know, at the time it was mail from customer that said, you know, thank you so much. Some of them, it was mail says, you know, my family, we're health conscious. We don't eat hot dog. But my son goes to a baseball game. His friend eats hot dog and he feels left alone because he just want to be part of his friend. It's a group of friends. So by giving him the hot dog, the veggie dog, he went and they just put on a barbecue and those are yours. And he said he felt part of the group. And, you know, social acceptance is very important. And so having a choice like this, that's what it is, having a choice. And then we start doing, you know, slice and pepperoni, and you grow by distribution and you grow by increasing the offering. And we were the number one plant-based alternative fresh in North America. We went to almost 7,000 stores and we start winning award, and it gives credibility to the business, you know. So it's being at the right place at the right time with the right product and put the right team of people together around you. I like the quote from Sir Hillary, who climbed the Everest. He says, you don't climb a mountain by yourself.
You're absolutely right. So if you and your team are having veggie dogs, what are you, Eve, putting on your veggie dog?
Oh, I love the German sauerkraut, traditional mustard and sauerkraut. That's my style. I don't like too many things. And also I like the caramelized onion.
I'll suggest those to my kids, but they like strictly ketchup right now. I'll see if I can get them to change at some point in time. So you grew Eve Fine Foods from a hot dog or veggie dog manufacturer into something much bigger. You sold the company. I don't know how much you sold it for, but I know you did extremely well. You could have quit there, enjoyed life, but instead you launch Gardein. And that goes on to incredible success. You sell that company. Now you've launched Conscious Foods, which is plant-based seafood. Why do you keep doing this when many people would say, you've done so well, just enjoy life?
You know, that's a very, very good point over here because, you know, as entrepreneur, I have a passion for what I do. And I feel very privileged, Scott, that, you know, I study culinary and I teach entrepreneurship to my student. And I tell them my last business, I had 300 employees. I had PhD, MBA working for me. We were producing 100 tons of foods a week. And my only education was I had a life MBA, but I had a culinary degree like my student. So I said, don't sell yourself short. You know, we have a great program, great foundation is what you do with it. But I have this question asked quite often, you know, why don't you retire and enjoy life? I said, I'm a painter. I'm an artist in my food business. So, you know, I have Gordon Smith in my house. He was painting at 93 when he passed away. And there was nobody going to see Gordon and say, Gordon, why don't you put your brush down? Go retire, do something. So for an artist, it's okay, a Picasso or an architect is the same way. But for an entrepreneur, you say, you're 65, why don't you go enjoy life? But what if your work is part of enjoying life? And for me, I feel like I'm a Swiss knife as an entrepreneur. So someday I use my screwdriver, someday I use my knife, someday I use my toothpick. And being an entrepreneur, you use all your tool in your toolbox. And there's something beautiful about realizing yourself when you find something that you like. And you know what? There's nothing like waking up in the morning and feel you're doing something good for the world and doing something good with your employees. And you're doing something that is very unique that, you know, I believe everybody has a unique DNA. There's a place for you in the world. You just need to find it. But once you find your place, that what you're good at doing, you know, we're doing amazing things. Conscious is, I think, is my best work. But Gardein was an unbelievable company that we brought a lot of innovation. We were the first one to do what we call wet extrusion. So we developed a technology to create fibers from plant-based that are mimic very much like chicken or beef. So now that technology is used by a lot of different companies. And I feel, you know, you like Elon Musk or not. I mean, he's a character that brings a lot of passion in people, but you have to commend him that without him, I don't think. Last week I was in Miami and I had a Mustang SUV, totally electric, on my Uber ride. And I said, if it was not for Musk, Ford would have never invested the money in the electric car. So, you know, sometimes you look at the people that are the entrepreneur and what they do for the world, and everybody has to follow after it. And I think the plant-based, once you create the innovation, you know, with 8 billion people, it's natural there's room for plant-based in the marketplace. It's just you need to go to have good product, and it has to be the same price, and it has to be accessible, and it has to be good for you and good for the planet. So once you have those are criteria, there's a market for it. And I feel great about doing what I do.
And you just mentioned that you feel your current company, Conscious Foods, is your best work yet. And the general concept, and I know it's much more difficult than this, but it's plant-based seafood, which I imagine strikes most people. It did me as curious. What motivated you to create Conscious Foods?
So Conscious, you know, you look at the marketplace and the Beyond Meat and the Impossible, they play in the burger business. But, you know, and there's a lot of perception that seafood is good for you and, you know, you got omega-3, et cetera. But the same way, Scott, that in our lifetime, and you're a young fellow, we're probably all going to be driving an electric car or an hydrogen car in the next 10 to 20 years, okay? Well, in the same way, in our lifetime, we will be eating farm fish because we're running out of fish in the ocean. And farm fish is not the same as wild. And there's a lot of controversy right now of farm salmon. Farm salmon is done with artificial color, artificial flavor. The ingredient is not the cleanest. So there's a lot of controversy. So my idea was always, I say it's my best work because it's the cleanest ingredient deck that we have. So my first business is Veggie Cuisine was clean, but we use soy and wheat and liquid smoke. And, you know, that's the tool we had at the time. Gardein, our extrusion business, at the time we used some whitener, titanium dioxide, that is not allowed anymore. And we use also wheat and soy. Now, there's a little bit of backlash. People who are celiac don't want to eat wheat. Some people don't want to eat soy. It's an allergen. So we use real vegetable for our product. And like our salmon is made with carrot. In konjac, it's also called elephant yam. It's a yam from Asia. It becomes a flour and we use it. So it's real ingredient, real vegetable. And it's one thing I like. It's not any more expensive than traditional protein. So you don't have to make the equation to, oh, it's 40% more expensive. So it's easily available and we're very excited about it. We're just launching a smoked salmon right now that the last 3 weeks we won 2 awards for it as not just best alternative, but best frozen food. And those are kind of recognition that it's good for the company and it's good for the employees too, you know, that they feel they're doing something worthwhile doing.
Do you find with plant-based seafood and things like the plant-based sushi that you have created that you can find in your frozen food section, do you find that simply having someone try it is what gets them over the hurdle? Because that's not something that seems natural to find for most people in their grocery store.
Scott, that's a great question. And this is one of the biggest challenge we're facing with our company right now. Because, you know, my first business is Veggie Cuisine. Well, the hot dog, you just steam it or boil it. You know what to do. My second business with Gardein was more chicken tender, chicken nuggets, fishless filet. Thing you put in a broil oven or your oven, and again, you can serve with ketchup and everything. Frozen sushi, we're changing behavior. So that's one of the biggest challenges. We do a lot of demo because once people try it properly, and one of the biggest concern we have is that, let's say you have a protein in your freezer, usually you defrost it in your fridge. Our product, rice, the fridge is a killer of rice. If you try it and defrost our sushi in the fridge, it makes the rice very dry. So you don't have a good experience. We have it in three different locations on our packaging, but people don't read instruction. That's the biggest complaint we have. Oh, the rice is dry. And there's three ways to do our frozen sushi. You can leave it out 2.5 hours, ready to eat. You can microwave 1 minute, it's ready to eat. Or you could put in hot water for 5 or 6 minutes and ready to eat. So changing behavior is not easy. That's why we're very excited about our smoked salmon, because you can defrost in the fridge. You can put it in a bagel. You can do an omelet. So it's an easier product to understand. But there's a friend of mine who says, Eve, why are you a pioneer all the time? Because I'm a settler. Like this business, we're the first one to do sushi. And therefore, we're the best and different. But we need to educate the customer. But you have to look at it, like I say, like it's almost like frozen pizza. Everybody has a frozen pizza because it's convenient. And sometimes you don't want to go out and you say, for the kids especially, all right, let's do a frozen pizza tonight. And our product is a little bit like this. And it's really for Gen Z and millennial. They study, they try something, they're snacking. It's very convenient, but there's an education component to it.
Well, as you just laid out, the smoked salmon, the plant-based smoked salmon from Conscious Foods, that might be the gateway in for a lot of people. And then they try more that is in the portfolio. I'm wondering what your gateway was to Little Kitchen Academy, because that's the reason you and I are having this conversation here today.
You know, I believe my friend Mike Donald introduced me to Brian, and I love the concept. I mean, I wish this was there when my kid would grow up, you know, because I'm a true believer. Unfortunately, in school, they used to teach basic skill of cooking. And I'm a true believer that it is a life skill that everybody should acquire. Why is it called freshman 15? Is because the kids is at home and now mom is not cooking anymore. And they end up going to university and my gosh, they don't know how to cook it. It's a survival skill. So the Little Kitchen Academy was introduced to me and I said, what a fantastic idea to teach about what is real food, use a knife skill, the social aspect with other kid also involve learning. And then you bring your creative side also. You know, one of my kid was not really social, but I could see in an environment like this, it would have been good for him. So very excited about the Little Kitchen Academy. I know right now, I think they're launching in Whole Foods, I think in the US, you know, fantastic partner. And I wish there would be 500. In every area, I should have a Little Kitchen Academy because there's a need. And for the parent, I know I've seen the reaction of those kids. They go home and they're so excited about to show the parent. Very much when I went to my culinary school, I want to cook for everybody of what I've just learned. And I was watching a show yesterday with Ricardo as a Canadian celebrity in the food. And he said, how many occasions you have to be with a group of people, and it doesn't matter your political affiliation, but you have a good time around a table. And cooking is one of those joy that you can have with your family. And the beauty is they teach from 3 to 6 and 6 to 9 and 9 to 12. So all different age could learn. And they learn about farming and green and, you know, what's real food. So it's fantastic.
Well, you've just alluded to some of it, but I imagine a man in your position in the food industry for as long as you have been in it and as influential as you have been within it has been asked by many a cooking school or many a children's cooking school to be a part of it. What makes Little Kitchen Academy different?
Well, first, it's local. And I love the two founders' story about being involved in the food. And I had a whole bunch of friends who invested in it too. But I think it was just, I love the branding. I love the size of the school and the fact that you could really move it around, could put it in a container and then put it in a private school or in a public school. So it's got a lot of potential to expand an influence or neighborhood. Yeah, it's just a great concept, and I love to be part of it.
Well, and you mentioned Whole Foods a little while ago. I know that there are steps to be taken, but you've worked with Whole Foods for a very long time. Whole Foods has changed the way that grocery stores are perceived and how many people eat. Do you see a synergy there between the two companies after having worked with both?
Whole Foods is an investor in Conscious. So they also make investment. And, you know, I went to see Whole Foods in Texas in 1986. And I said, oh my gosh, there's a supermarket that understand my need. You know, Conscious, we start as a seafood, but, you know, Onigiri doesn't have plant-based seafood. But we think it's a lifestyle brand. We want people to feel when they buy Conscious that, oh, they've done the job. I know it's going to taste good. I know it's going to be good for me, and I know it's going to be good for the planet. And that's the reaction I had when I went to see Whole Foods for the first time, is that somebody that has done the homework, because 90% of the food that is in a traditional supermarket has or preservative or artificial ingredient or et cetera, versus Whole Foods, most of the food is clean. So I think the Little Academy isn't the same thing. You know you're going to have a good product. You're going to have good teacher. You know you're going to learn. It's not just a place that people dump their kid and go. It's a place where the kid is going to learn something. And it's probably a life-changing event, sending your kid to Lower Kitchen Academy.
Well, and I know it's different than when you studied the culinary arts, but that was certainly a life-changing event for you. And certainly the potential is there at Little Kitchen Academy for that. And that's what they firmly believe. It's the question that I ask everybody who comes on this podcast, Eve. So I'm going to ask you now, in your kitchen at home, what is the one ingredient that is always in it and why?
You know, I love risotto. Caramelio risotto from Italy. You can cook so many things with it. And it's easy, and it's something that you can cook for a group of people. And when in season, I love truffle, not truffle oil, but the real truffle. And so it has a lot of application. So that's probably one of my go-to ingredient that it's always in my pantry.
Well, and I can only imagine what you're dreaming up for recipes at home. Maybe we'll get to that in a second. But there is an obvious segue here, because as I look at what you've done in the food industry, but also the fact that you chose to purchase shares and become the majority owner of the Pacific Institute of Culinary Arts, you teach. Why do you feel, Eve, compelled to teach?
So really, the culinary art for me, when my wife and I bought, so we are the owner, my wife and I are the owner of the school, it was really a way to give back to the community. You know, the school needed to reinvent itself a little bit, rebranding. The curriculum needed to be updated. And so my wife and I look at it, and we do a lot of charity event at the school. We give the school for a variety of kids program, chef program. And so on a regular basis, we give our space and we're trying to give back to the community. And most of my business, Gardein, we were in 25,000 supermarket. So most of my business is always done internationally. So being involved locally, my wife now is a judge into the Vancouver Magazine. She's a judge into the 100 best restaurant in Canada. We both study WSET for wine. So we give a course on wine. And we love create event. You know, every semester we have a new semester starting, and we have, you know, 30, 40, 50 students. We have a boutique school. There's no more than 12 students per class. So I love to talk to them in the beginning and teaching them about business and entrepreneurship. But it's so fun to see the little shy kid from international country or whatever that doesn't speak. And you see him after 1 year and he's on fire. Like you see, he developed recipe and cake. And now that kid has found his passion. That's the beauty about food, is that you can find your passion, and it's a passion that you share and you give, you know. The danger about the school, there's chocolate week, there's cake week, and they all want to give you their chocolate and their cake. I'm happy I'm not 300 pounds because, you know, it would be a dangerous thing. But yeah, some of the food we do at our school is so good. And then we do special event. Like 3 weeks ago, we did a Julia Child dinner. And then a month ago, we did The Bear. The Bear is a famous, it's a show on Netflix right now. And then we did the Bear dinner. And then we're doing a Mother's Day brunch. And all the students are involved. We won a competition of the gingerbread competition at the Hyatt Hotel in Vancouver. So all the students are part of this, you know, working together to create a big gingerbread. We did the Budapest Hotel this year. So I like to be involved in the community. And I feel for me, it's a way to give back. And I've been very successful, very privileged with all my business. But part of being successful, I feel life is a circle. You have to learn to give back what the world has gave you. So I feel very privileged in that sense that I'm able to do that.
I think most people would look at a school like Pacific Institute of Culinary Arts and think, okay, they are producing chefs who will work in a restaurant. Maybe that person becomes a restaurateur. But you're a perfect example of someone who has not ended up in either of those roles, though you have been in them. So when you are teaching your students, what do you want those aspiring young chefs to learn from you and to take away?
So, you know, in my class, when I tell them is take the knowledge that you have, but you could become a food photographer, a food blogger, a chocolatier, a baker. We have some of our alumni who are celebrity food show in the Philippines. We have people who have opened a French patisserie in China. We have somebody in Toronto who has a Vietnamese sauce. He went into food manufacturing. There's so many different avenues. Once you learn the foundation, it's really learning about painting. Then you can decide what you do with your canvas. What style do you want? And that's an important part, is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, yeah, the food, the restaurant business is a very difficult business and you work long hours. But it's what you do with what you have. And I think it's giving confidence in yourself, but it's also giving the work ethic. You're going to get what you put in. It's the old way of working, is the amount of money and the amount of time you put it into a project. We see all different kinds of students. We see the student that the parent says, I'm tired of you watching video, go do something in the school. We have a lot of students that do a graduated degree into something, and finally they can do follow their passion. And we have students who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s that have had a career in accounting or something. They say, I always want to be a baker, and I'm going to do it now. And so food brings passion in people. There's no doubt.
No, there is no doubt. And as you give me that answer, I can see so much synergy between your approach with your school and what they're doing at Little Kitchen Academy as well. Because really what you're trying to do and what Little Kitchen Academy is trying to do is provide people with some tools, but really give them self-confidence to do what they really are meant to do and want to do in this life.
And that is what is nice when I watch the video of the kid. They're so proud of showing what they can do. And it's all about self-confidence, you know, and again, food and creating food and sharing food. I think we're giving them a life skill that I know. I have a lot of friends who send their kid there and they say, when they come home, they just want to share their little passion of what they learned in the last 3 hours, you know, and they want to go back tomorrow.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And as parents, we get to have the products of what they bring home as well, which is very tasty. Now, I'm sure you've been asked about your own kitchen before. I asked you about your ingredient a little earlier, but I was specifically directed to ask you about your home oven. So what is the story about your home oven?
My home oven. I have many different ovens in my home, but there's, you know, the latest technology. I mean, what we teach in our school, we have one of those Rational oven, and there's also a Nabu oven. There's different technology over the last 20 years that has come up in the market. Those ovens, they can do anything for you. You can put protein in the morning, and then you time it, and at 4 o'clock it cooks, steam it, it browns it and it keeps in hot until you want it. And after you take it out, it's a dishwasher. It washes itself. Every student that leaves wants to have one of those in their kitchen. So for me, being a chef, and my wife and I built a house not too long ago, I have all the toy that, you know, a pizza oven, my Kalamazoo grill, not only does gas, but it does charcoal and wood. So in one of those special ovens. So you have, if you want to grill anything, you have the choice of the different method you want to grill it. And I have a steam oven for cooking too. So I have all the toy and I feel very lucky. And those steam ovens are fantastic. Last night we had a couscous and you just put the couscous in the oven and it just really gets fluffy with the steam oven.
Well, you've certainly earned all of the toys, including what I understand is an incredible wine cellar as well. You're pretty proud of that too?
Yes, I'm a wine collector. But the reason I'm a wine collector is that wine is made to be shared. And I have like 1.5 liter, 3 liters, 5 liters, 6 liters, 9 liters. And the reason you have a wine cellar is because wine needs to be aged. And you buy the wine of 2009, but you're not going to drink it until 225, or a special wine, especially Bordeaux or Burgundy. But there's good wine all over the world right now. And so by aging the wine properly and then open it with friend and family, and I give to charity wine bottle, people realize, wow, this is so good because it's been aged. It's been aged properly. And so that's one of the reasons I buy my wine in auction, usually in the U.S. And, you know, it's part of a pleasure of mine to bid and really do a lot of research on wine, because it's not only the wine producer, it's the wine grape and the year it was produced. So there's a lot of research to be put into it. But yeah, I love sharing my wine with friends. Hopefully one day we'll have a glass of wine together.
I will take you up on that invitation. And you provided me the perfect segue, because while they certainly don't serve wine of any type at Little Kitchen Academy, they end every single session sitting around the community table and having a meal together. And as you just described, I could see the smile on your face and your eyes light up when you talk about having a meal with family or with friends. How often do you have that opportunity to get together and have some type of dinner party, maybe just with another couple or a larger one altogether?
On a weekly basis, because my wife is, she's Asian. She's from the British colony of Hong Kong, I think she likes to say. And I think, you know, for us, the two culture, the Chinese culture, love their food. And if you go in a Chinese restaurant, there's kids all over the place, and it's an area where family meets, you know. And that's the beauty about the culture, the Chinese culture, is really you bring your family together. And if there's kid and they're yelling, you're just there to have a family moment. And actually, having a French background, Paul Bocuse, who was the person who created Nouvelle Cuisine in the 70s, is revered in Japan and in Asia. You know, the French cuisine is actually the foundation for a lot of the Nouvelle Cuisine or California cuisine, etc. So I love to cook and I love to be with friend and family. So I would say every week we have some kind of get together.
That's wonderful. And yes, I will take you up on the invitation at some point. So I look forward to being a part of it. I know how busy you are. I know how much you have going on. So I really appreciate you taking the time to meet me in the kitchen. Merci beaucoup.
Avec plaisir. Merci. À bientôt.
Meet Me in the Kitchen is curated and produced by Toolkit Content. You can find more information about Little Kitchen Academy, including classes, locations, employment, and franchise opportunities at littlekitchenacademy.com. What's the one ingredient that's always in your kitchen?